At the end of your life, what will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?
How would you like to know? How is today AI transforming industries and impacting organizations, regardless of their size, and how you fit into all those transformation and change? Luckily, we have an expert that is joining us here. Not only that he co-founded and that he is the CEO of Transformerty platform that is moving so many things in direction of transformation with AI that is affecting security, that is affecting legal aspects of it, and so much more. But he also is showing where technology has been in early How would you like to know, how is it today AI platforms that are available impacting businesses? And where would you like to start, specifically if you are pressured and stressed out to make a decision? Right now, we're seeing a plethora of changes that is happening and transforming organizations. And frankly, so many executives and leaders don't know where to start. Luckily, we have a phenomenal answer for you. Today's guest is not only going to be sharing how he co-founded and its leading transformational AI platform that is affecting all aspects of organization, ranging from legal all the way to transforming internally and external organizations with security and so much more. But ultimately, showing and reflecting on how technology evolved in recent decade and how you can position for success. Without further ado, let me introduce you to today's guest on the Legacy Leader Show, Brendan Card, CEO and co-founder of Terzo. Brendan, welcome.
Thank you so much, Isabel. It's great to be here. Happy Friday.
It's absolute pleasure. And thank you so much for finding time in your busy schedule. But so much that is going on with AI, that it's mushrooming, ballooning, and expanding so on rapid scale in so many different environments. So before we go into that particular topic, please, if you don't mind, just share a little bit. I'm just floored how you started in technology arena. You accomplished so much so early on in your life and got to where you are today. Do you mind giving us a little bit of a glimpse? How did you even start it?
Glad to give you a little background on how I got into this space. As a young man graduating from undergraduate, you know, timing in life is very important. And I was fortunate to graduate at a time where the iPhone just came out, and I actually majored in economics and finance and had a lot of interest in going to Wall Street and banking and venture capital. And all of a sudden I had interest in tech with the iPhone. I thought, wow, this could be really big, right? We could live on these things, I thought. And that made me apply to Oracle right out of college. And I went to Oracle for a couple of years, learned a ton, worked for great people. And then I was able to get into IBM at a very young age. I worked for IBM Cloud, IBM Watson for about 3.5 years. And then I went to Microsoft for 5 years and had a great exposure to CTOs, CIOs, learned a lot about how these Fortune 500 companies run, and was very blessed to work for some great organizations in my career.
That is very impressive, Brendan. And frankly, yes, one of the top, obviously, logos and companies in the world that so many people aspire, desire to work with or be associated. Not only you had a chance to be part of it, but also obviously learn and see what is going on, either we're ranging on cloud solutions and what technology is offering, and also obviously what's available, what alternatives are, and then where the future is going and what is missing. I think you put some really amazing thinking and decided to solve one of the biggest problems that obviously prompts you to really lead what you're doing today. Do you mind enlightening our guests what that is?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about this contract problem that I discovered during my time at Microsoft, really. I wish I could say I was smart enough to come up with this idea on my own out of the clear blue sky, but the reality is at Microsoft, I was hearing complaints from customers every day about their Microsoft contracts and agreements they had all over the world, different countries, different currencies, many different business units, and a lot of dollars being spent. Then I dug into the problem further and asked about all the suppliers. Now, what about Oracle? What about IBM? What about Accenture? What about your non-IT providers? There's so many third-party suppliers that you're trying to manage relationships and contract data for. And there was no real system purposely built for this. So I recognized that every time we did a contract, people would put that contract in many different places. A lot of times it'd be in a C drive. Sometimes it'd be in OneDrive or SharePoint. Other times it'd be in a Box folder. Occasionally people would put it into a procurement system like Ariba or Coupa. And there was no standardization. And I was shocked by this. And the other thing that I learned while I was at Microsoft was that the CFOs of these big public companies had no visibility or insights into this contract data, which shocked me. And I thought, how is a CFO supposed to forecast, budget, optimize expenses across the supply chain if they don't have this contract data? It seemed like a huge gap. And then I dug into that further, doing some homework across many different organizations. And I realized this is one of the biggest data problems in the world and about $2 trillion problem based on some of the experts like McKinsey and Gartner and Bain, right? They all have put that number out there. And DocuSign CEO recently said this is a $2 trillion problem. So we're very motivated to help customers solve this data challenge.
But you're doing also more than just that. Obviously, you are pioneering something very radical in terms of AI, finding the ways not only to solve the problems, but to leverage some of the best technologies and truly trying to be trailblazer to find ways to help not only legal aspects of it, but also projects and maintenance and overall flow of everything that is then being decided based on financial, obviously, resources. How is this impacting and what is the return on investment and what implications does really have a whole flow of obviously that initial initiation of the contract to its completion, as well as obviously service delivery. And you mentioned some really big companies in terms of consulting, but both of us know that consulting is rapidly changing as well. How we engage with C-suite executives and pain points that are having. So I would love to, if you don't mind, challenge you for a second with the question and your perspective that I know so many are still lost. How today actually are the best practices for executives to really lead with AI? And first of all, where they're at based on your polls, what you're hearing, what you're seeing, and how actually they can move the needle forward.
Yeah, so it's a good question. There's a few questions in there. So I'm gonna answer it in a few different parts. And you know, when it comes to our AI and our IP that we've been developing for the last 4 years, it's considered applied AI. And everyone's talking about Gen AI because of ChatGPT and all the consumer stuff like Gemini. And it's very trendy right now. So everyone's excited about Gen AI. We've been focused on applied AI, which is very different. And we've been building technology with a combination of different solutions, AI, ML, also neural networks, natural language processing, to read documents with a very high level of accuracy and parse structured and unstructured data for many different use cases, like you mentioned, legal, finance, procurement, supply chain, risk, compliance teams, right? All of that precious data lives inside of these static PDFs. They could be contract data, it could be invoices, it could be purchase orders, it could be a bill of lading. But it's a static PDF that has to today be manually reviewed. It's a very slow, tedious process. It's error prone. And we automate that entire process for our customers. But the reason why we believe Turzo is different is because we provide 99% data accuracy for our customers as part of that process. And it's critical to have trustworthy data, right? That's very important for these executives today to make decisions, as we know. And the funny thing is, I was pitching AI in 2013. So we were very early at IBM, and IBM had a great vision, as everyone knows. They're on Jeopardy in like the early 2000s with their Watson, and they had this vision for probably 25, 30 years. But one AI wasn't very mature, and two, the customers certainly weren't ready. Customers just got to the SaaS, you know, the SaaS world in 2013. We're in there pitching, hey, all these AI things. It was a little bit too early, and I remember having these conversations, and no one took it seriously. Now what we see, and what I've seen across the C-suite, whether you look at the general counsel, the chief legal officer, you look at the CFO and the procurement team, or you talk to the CTO, who's the brains behind all the tech, people are now taking AI seriously because of what we've seen in the consumer market. That's the reality. People don't want to hear that. That's the truth, though, because we've seen a massive increase in budgets for AI in 2024, and you're going to see more in 25. Most of the budgets that were created by teams back in 23 and 22 were all proof of concept budgets. Very small R&D projects that you would do with Microsoft Azure, AWS, Google Cloud, et cetera, just science projects. See if this stuff really works, because no one really had confidence in it. If you sit down with a CTO behind closed doors and no one's in the room, he's going to tell you that, oh, we don't know if this AI works, right? So with ChatGPT and all these consumer things, the answer is that it gave a lot of people more confidence. And wow, this technology maybe can work in the 2020s. I mean, we have, you know, Elon and his crew sending Teslas to Mars, I think, right now on, you know, rockets. So I think that they're like, okay, yeah, maybe we can use AI to solve some of these internal challenges. So I'm seeing a lot more openness from executives. I'm seeing a lot more interest. But what I'm also seeing, and I think it's really important, is it's industry-specific use cases that need to be solved with real tangible business impact that's going to help the bottom line immediately. And companies and leaders, whether you're, it doesn't matter if you're Fortune 500 or even you're a private company right now, everyone has pressure around EBITDA and profit margins and being more efficient. So executives are forced right now between the board's initiatives and all the pressure from an operational perspective to figure out how to optimize expenses and use AI. And AI at the same time is becoming much more mature and accepted and generally available. So it's a great combination. And now we see a lot of companies coming forward and saying, we need AI. It's a now mandatory initiative. Where a couple of years ago when we were selling Thurzo, it was a luxury, nice to have. It was like buying a Ferrari, right? Now people are like, wow, this is mandatory. I need this to do my job. And that's the shift that we've seen. And I expect to see that a lot more over the next, you know, couple months here in 2024.
That is definitely great overview. And thank you for sharing, because you do spot on in terms of the shift. And it's great to for you to be in position to have a pulse on and see where the readiness is, right? But at the same time, also to identify and see where the challenge is. So do you mind sharing some of the challenges that you are seeing that are definitely hindering that progress, specifically when we really lean in different sectors for like highly regulated industries? Are we talking about financial or healthcare? And then how it is those challenges could truly, for awareness for the executives that are not obviously on top of it, the game and understanding what they can really actually do to augment them?
Yeah, so the good thing is I can actually answer this question with some confidence because we work very closely in the financial services sector. Our first customer ever is the largest financial transaction processor in the world. We also work with some of the largest healthcare organizations. So data privacy, data security is incredibly important to these organizations, these leaders. It's very important. They need to be compliant and they need to be secure. They're managing a lot of confidential information. So naturally, they're going to move a little bit slower because they have to worry about all the risks around using these new technologies and putting this confidential data in all these different systems. And I think the biggest challenge that people have right now, Isabella, is that there's just so much out there. There's so much being thrown at all these people, right? It's hard enough as human beings in 2024 to just live in a normal world and have your phone and see all these advertisements and all this stimulation. You're constantly getting messaging all day. You're trying to filter things. And then as an executive, a leader like yourself, you come to the table and you're trying to make decisions on technology and discover new technology. And there's so much being thrown at you every day by different people, different teams, and you're trying to digest it all. And it's a lot for people. So people naturally hit the brakes and say, wow, I need to slow down a little bit. This is just too much, right? And everything happens really quickly now in today's world. So that's one of the biggest challenges that I've seen with some of these organizations too, is that leaders are very interested, but there's almost too many options, right? It's like if you're at a restaurant and you got a 14 page menu, it's just, wow, I don't even know where to get started. Right. Yeah. So we see that happening a lot. And the reality is too, is that most great AI is coming from young startups. Most of it. Now, obviously Microsoft and Google and these companies have incredible solutions in AI, but a lot of the specific solutions for that are being specialized solutions solving real, like you've been big public companies. And that's the reality these leaders have to face. So they're constantly going through committees to figure out how to address this. They're looking for advice from experts, people like you in the field, the consultants that come in and say, hey, how should we adopt AI? How do we approach this over the next 3 to 5 years? Because it is a long-term journey. So those are some of the challenges we see here, or I've seen day in and day out.
That is again, great overview. And I really appreciate sharing some of your experiences that you're running into with your customers. But back to exactly that point, we're also seeing that customer behavior is dramatically changing as well. And even though we want to put the brakes or want to take an extra time because we don't have necessarily internally capacity to deal with additional extra layer, or we don't have a skill set, right? Because it's not just the making decision, but if truly like what do we have internally and who can support that and how we can get this right. On the other hand, we see this huge parallel where customers are already making shifts in choices, decisions, and also what's important to them. So I'm curious, what do you see from customer experience that it's being done, that it's really great example, and then how Terzo plays this phenomenal role in it?
You made a great point there. An excellent point. There's a massive challenge in every organization, even an organization like Terzo, to adopting new solutions and assigning project managers internally to run the project and to do the deployment and to have all the resources internally to actually leverage this technology. Because over the last couple of years, most organizations have been trimmed with layoffs, and procurement teams that had 12 now have 4. Legal teams that have 20 now have 8. So they're overworked as it is, and underpaid, by the way. But that's a different problem. But the reality is that these teams are trying their best to keep up with their day-to-day work. And then you're saying, hey, go out and buy a new AI solution and throw that on your plate. And they're like, oh, wow, I don't have the time for this. I can't take this on. So I heard that loud and clear. I heard that loud and clear when we were getting ready to build Terzo, when I was putting my capital behind Terzo early on. I went out and did a ton of, you know, investigation. I wouldn't even call it diligence. I'll call it investigation, FBI work, to figure out what's going on. I'm going to pick on our CLM friends a little bit just because I got to give context. What's going on with iCert or CLM? Because I don't see any finance or procurement people ever using it. Never saw it in my whole career. What's going on with DocuSign CLM? Because, you know, a few lawyers are using it, but it's never adopted across the organization because AI is not really accurate. What's going on with Ironclad? No solution. They have all this. The reality is they're giving you the solution. They're giving you the software to log in and use the AI, and you have to train yourself and your team, and you have to become an expert in the software to get the data and insights you want. And it's actually a very big process. It's complex. It takes a lot of training, adoption, change management, all those types of things, a lot of testing, a lot of QA. And everyone told me, B, we want this as a service. We don't have the hours, the bandwidth, the people to use and learn AI internally in our legal department or in our procurement team or in our CFO office. We're not trying to become experts in computer scientists and play with your AI and fix your AI all day. We're trying to get data and insights and make decisions. I'm like, of course. So that's when we came up, we sat down, we said, we need to provide AI as a service and do this data work for our customers. And we need to help them as a partner so they can outsource this work to us. And that's why we created the AI as a service, you know, terminology. We talk about it all the time. We were talking about humans in the loop with our AI technology for the QA process since day one. A lot of companies were trying to hide the fact they had humans in the loop and trying to tell customers that they get to 99% data accuracy. Well, everyone in the world knows that's not true. So we took a different approach because we knew customers did not have the capacity, the people internally to do all this work and become experts in some software. They wanted the data. That's what we learned. And that's why we built Terzo the way we did, provide our customers the data, the analytics, the insights, so they can make decisions and not have to do all the heavy lifting.
That is so powerful. And I love, again, not only, you know, your background that speaks to that, obviously working with such amazing companies in the past, but the fact that obviously nothing existed prior to this, to this level, that can robustly show you the not only financial picture, but as you mentioned, procurement, supply chain, IT, legal, but also in the same time being done in a way with AI platform that can only give you things very quick and efficiently. We know what happens when you have a poor data and when you make the wrong decisions. And that also costs so much money and time, and so many organizations losing as a result the stability. And right now, it's, we don't have obviously much luxury to make a tremendous guesswork, as I would call it, because that guesswork can be extremely costly. And definitely customers don't have the tolerance for that, right? So when we look at to this from invoicing, contracts, and everything you were mentioning earlier, but also looking at this intelligence aspects of it and analytics and data, do you mind sharing a little bit about how quickly something can really be established and shown that whole picture of to someone when they plug and integrate that? And something also, obviously, you did something recently, you integrated with IBM, with Watson, right? And how is now this beautiful trifecta of Terzo, IBM, and then Gen I as a driving vehicle behind it, bringing that forward?
Yeah, so, you know, when we look at the data and the insights that our customers are trying to gain, there's a handful of different use cases across verticals. But what we, one use case we've seen consistently across many verticals is the idea of IT cost optimization and figuring out where all their software, all their hardware spend is going and finding duplication and redundancy. Why? Because the last 10, 12 years, there was so much IT purchase, so much SaaS, so many applications. There's just a lot of waste, a lot of sprawl, a lot of things no longer being used, seats being missed. So there's a lot of waste there that customers are trying to identify by using the contract data. So one of the things we do very quickly for customers within the first 30 days is we show them across a lot of their top tier vendors, like the Adobes, the Salesforces, the Microsofts, what you're paying for every single product and service down to the SKU level. And we categorize it so they can immediately see the duplication and redundancy. Now, for years, I saw this work being done by our friends at Ernst & Young, KPMG, and other consulting firms doing this work manually. They call it, you know, a software asset management review or whatever, advisory, SAM advisory. We're doing this very, very quickly with AI, scanning all these tables of SKUs, putting the categories together, showing you that overlap so you can. Easily back to these vendors and find we're saving customers millions of dollars doing just that across IT. Now, that's one use case. We also have use cases with physical parts and the supply chain, right? We're working with one of the largest airlines in the world. They're actually going through their supplier parts that are inside the plane and the maintenance organization to understand the warranties, the rebates, the prices that they've locked in for 10 years on all these parts. And we're bringing insights to them very, very quickly that would normally take 6 months or a year through a professional services engagement. So oftentimes the alternative, or what the current, I guess, state is of these solutions today, is mostly professional services with some type of consulting and then data output at the end of the engagement, oftentimes many years, multi-year contract. We're getting these same insights and a lot more oftentimes in a 30-day POC. So for customers, that's a huge, you know, that's a huge value add, the speed to value, and not to mention much cheaper as well to get these insights, right? So that's some of the data that we're bringing in. We also bring in things such as, you know, standard renewal tracking data like start date, end date, total contract value, renewal deadline, renewal governance is a huge thing. There's billions of dollars being renewed per year in our customer, you know, procurement and supply chain organizations, billions per year. You miss one or two contracts or you don't have visibility in the right agreements, you could waste $10 million, $5 million very easily. So this is important to our customers to monitor all of this data and to have this data in real time. And when we think about it, we're taking static document data, extracting it, structuring it, putting analytics and insights on top of it, along with search, sort, and report. And that's the current state of Terzo. That's how some of the biggest companies in the world are using Terzo. Now, this amazing partnership we talk about with IBM Watson that I'm super excited about, not only because I work there, but think very highly of IBM. I also think IBM is one of the most trusted suppliers in the entire IT ecosystem. So we want to partner with them because we want to let customers know that data privacy, data security, data trust, very important to us. And IBM takes it seriously. So we're going to leverage their best practices as well. And we're going to use their Gen AI capabilities to automate insights and a lot of manual tasks and to correlate data sets and to help customers get answers from their documents, from their contracts within a few seconds and ask questions such as, show me a report of all contracts above $100,000 that are expiring in Q4, question mark. Give that report in about 2 to 3 seconds that they can then export and share. We're talking about taking jobs that are sometimes 12 weeks of work down to a couple minutes total. That's where our heads are at around this IBM partnership, is we want to automate a lot of these insights and answers for teams without them having to go through and click around and filter and dig for data. We want to give them actionable insights very, very quickly. And that's why we partner with IBM Watson. And next week, I'll be at the IBM Think Conference talking about this solution and officially rolling out the beta version to the public. We're very, very excited, optimistic about what we're going to do for customers. And we think this is the future of finance.
Wow. I love how you tackle the concerns around customer initiatives and customer service, but obviously now you also demonstrated how you tackle operational optimization that everybody under sun would like to optimize and do better because of so many disruptions that you mentioned due to changing a fluctuation of team members, also skill sets, as well as obviously demands and expectations. And obviously everybody wants everything done yesterday. So having this exponential speed, but also having the accuracy is tremendous for obviously executive leadership to make not only decision, but really to keep a pulse in their organization, which brings really another point, Brandon, that you touched briefly on, which is obviously that risk management and opportunity to de-risk it and also opportunity to anticipate it. Do you mind sharing a little bit from that perspective, specifically since you mentioned financial industry and shifts that are happening there, and not only obviously here in the US, but globally, we see also so much change in European market and how we actually do transactionally business, which obviously that has to be with not only trusted infrastructure, as you mentioned that IBM fosters, but obviously now with Terzo and your platform and systems that are in place.
Absolutely. I mean, when you think about all of the business terms, financial terms, obligations, they're all locked in these PDF contracts. And the risk teams and compliance teams, whether they're looking at SLAs, or whether they're looking at data privacy addendums, whether they're looking at indemnities, whether they're looking at cybersecurity coverage for insurance, which is a very common risk measure that people are, you know, constantly trying to assess. All this data we bring out of the documents for our customers to monitor this and to be able to understand what contracts include, do not include these clauses, what contracts maybe have clauses that are not standard and more high risk. And our customers can actually categorize a contract and put a scorecard around it based on parameters like this. Also can add things such as GDPR or HIPAA or SOC 2 and SOC 1, which is something we see all the time in financial services. And not every supplier you're working with has SOC 1, for example. So if your board says, we need SOC 1 in all of our SaaS suppliers, for example, The board could say that. And you have to go through 400 suppliers and look at every contract and say, do they have this clause? Do they have, I don't know if they have SOC 1 in this contract. I don't know if they certify this. Or I had to go do that work manually. We can automate those type of tasks very quickly for those teams. And of course, there's financial impact there, right? There's always financial impact, especially when you talk about European markets, or you're looking at ESG. There's a lot of sustainability goals. There's a lot of requirements and government regulations that are put in place that teams need to adhere to. And it's very difficult. It's very difficult to do it. It's a lot of data. I talked to one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in Switzerland, and they said they had to go through 50,000 supplier contracts to look at the carbon clauses, carbon offset, real problem at the board level. And very expensive to do that with their internal team and their consulting teams. And that's something that they had to do manually because, you know, we met them afterward, unfortunately. Those are the type of opportunities that we love to participate in and love to win. Quite frankly, we think that we can do that better than anybody in the world. So, you know, we see that popping up all the time. In the US, there's going to be more regulatory standards. We already see healthcare and financial services, but there's a lot of new things popping up all the time. And it's very difficult for customers to constantly react to this and constantly track this data and report on this data. So we're trying to automate a lot of that. And the business impact for, you know, leaders listening here, for me too, well, I don't have to hire as many people. It's that simple, right? If we break it down, in 2001, I would have hired 10 people. Now I can hire one, right? So that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to create a lot more efficiencies with these type of processes.
That's brilliant. So it's like showing really what's possible internally for your own organization, and then obviously showing to the clients, which is a fantastic way to also walk the talk, right? And make things happen. But I love that this goes obviously beyond the data-driven decision-making. Obviously, you mentioned something in this segment also around competitive advantage, and which really a lot of people, as you said, it's so much out there. Every day, a new AI solution keeps popping up, and people are really trying to get a piece of the market and trying to find solutions, but obviously comprehensive solutions that you are envisioned, you are delivering already, and obviously you're going to be expanded upon. Do you mind sharing a little bit about what that looks like today, and what are you anticipating in the future?
So when it comes to the competitive landscape and everything that's going on in this whole space, we look at things in two simple ways. The way I think about it too, probably because of the way I kind of grew up in this tech game, but we look at companies like Terzo that serve the Fortune 500, and we look at everybody else, right? There's really SMB and enterprise. And if you look at the majority of startups, I don't know the percentage, it's very high. If I had to guess, it's probably 90% of startups are built for the SMB and mid-market, or mostly even SMB. A lot of times, not even mid-market. They're built for very, you know, small organizations, growth organizations, to get a lot of transactions done so they can, you know, get traction, have success. We took a different approach. We purposely built for the Fortune 500. And of course, we're not going to have 1,000 customers like some of the other companies. We're going to have 50 really big customers that we work every day with. It's a different model. So when you look at the companies that are purposely built for the enterprise, there's actually very few in this space right now that are purposely built for the enterprise. And if you look at companies like Palantir, that are very mature organizations, one of the best AI companies in the world, Pure AI, probably one of the best companies hands down. And they focused on public sector, defense, military contracts, like all these types of things. And they were purposely built for serving those complex customers. They weren't trying to sell to startups for $12,000. They're doing $50 million government contracts. So that's how they built the strategy of their organization. That's how they hired. That's how they built their software. That's how they serve their customers on the post-sales and support side. Same thing at Terzo. So when we look at the competitive landscape, there's actually only a few companies in this space around financial data, document AI, that are going after the customers that we serve. So it's very interesting. We're running into, funny enough, IBM Watson is one of our competitors that we ran into. We partner with them because we figured we could serve customers together, but they certainly are one of the options in these accounts for some of these AI projects, right? We run into even companies like Ernst & Young who are trying to build things for customers, and Accenture that are trying to build AI for customers for specific use cases. So interestingly enough, when people ask me this all the time, I'm always talking to investors about this. You know, who is the competition you're running into? And I'm constantly saying, hey, it's not pure competition. It's not like we're running into a Silicon Valley startup when we're talking to Bank of America. We're running into companies that everyone's heard of, very large companies that we're oftentimes competing with. And you say, you know, what is our competitive advantage or differentiation, or why do we win some of these deals? It's because of the accuracy of the data. We have great user experience as well, which is helpful, but we provide extremely accurate data, 99% data accuracy. And the reality is other companies can't get there the way they're built right now. And that's been helping us a lot have success. And it's extremely important to our customers and to us to have that data be accurate, or else you can't make smart decisions. Can't make any decisions if the data is not accurate.
That's so true. And it's also very important for people to understand that. And then who are the leaders of the pack, and which I love, again, that you mentioned, and what that looks like, because as you said, it's just depends who you're going after. And right now it's so great to see that these solutions can come to Fortune 500. We just hope that decision making and everything that they need to be successful, they can move a needle quicker, so that they can truly leverage solutions that are already available. But in the same time, we're obviously seeing the biggest questions that everybody is still puzzled by, which is, how do we start using AI, and what are the best practices, and what are best models for it? So with that in mind, what would you give advice for everybody, obviously, that's had a chance to listen and experience this, to really to say, if you're not having these few things in place already, maybe this is something you should be considering? Because I know that so many executives, so many leaders of Fortune 500 companies are still scratching their head, still trying to figure all of this out. And as a result, sometimes they're also delaying more than they should to really act on. So do you mind reflecting on that, please?
Yeah, but switch my hats from the Terzo CEO to just a Professor B talking to a group of leaders. I think the reality today, there's a lot of risk when it comes to bringing AI into a big public organization or even a high growth mid-market company. It's still risk. There's a lot of risk there. So I think the first thing you have to do, and I hate that I'm saying this, I really hate that I'm saying this, but it's just the reality, what you have to do. You have to build a governance committee to monitor, to evaluate, to assess, to be the front door, to protect the organization. You need to do that. That's the first thing you need to do before you bring in new tech, is you need to put people you trust, people that understand technology, people that have experience on a committee to make sure they are evaluating as a group what AI, one, is needed by the organization, and what that impact is going to be to the organization. And whether it's a 12-month payback or a 36-month payback, or maybe it's a 10-year payback, there's a lot of different scenarios. So that's the first thing I would do if I'm a leader. And I can tell you that the companies with amazing leadership, they've already done it. Unfortunately, I'm battling this all the time, these AI governance boards, and that's the right thing to do for compliance, for data security. So that's what I would do. The second thing I would do is I would really zero in, figure out what are the top priorities and why is AI going to help these priorities succeed? And what is that payback period? How long is that going to take? Because there's sometimes where you can turn AI on like Terzo, we're fortunate, you're going to get a 30-day return. You turn on some other AI projects, you might have to build and configure things for 24 months before you actually get some real value. It might be a little bit of a, you know, ramp period. So that's okay too, but that's a 2-year payback. Okay, you have to evaluate that. So I would walk through that, the business impact, the ROI, the timeline, once you understand all the initiatives and priorities. And then I'd really bubble it down, if I was leaders, to probably the top 3 things. Because if you put 5 things, you're never going to get through it. We've seen this. People, I love ambitious people, but organizations that have 5 goals and never get to them. We all know that, right? Let's be honest. So I would put the top 3 initiatives here And you're going to need your board or your executive team, in addition to your AI governance team, to also approve this. They're going to want to know what you're doing with the AI as well. So you're going to have to build a business case for these top three initiatives with your team internally, and then probably go present that to the powers that be. In my case, board, in most of these cases, some type of board, and say, hey, here's why we're going to invest in AI. Here's what the impact's going to be. Here's the timeline, and share it with everybody and get everybody comfortable and make these decisions. And I don't want to say make decisions by committee, because decisions will get delayed for a decade if you do things by committee, but someone needs to step up and own it. Typically, it could be the CTO, depending on the organization. And some of the organizations we work with, it's the CFO or CPO, procurement leaders, that are saying, hey, we need AI to drive the savings that you need. So that's really the simple steps that I would advise to leaders on doing this. And I would also say, shoot myself in the foot here too, take your time. Not when you're buying Terza, but take your time when you're, looking at all the different solutions out there, because there's things changing every month. Every month there's something new popping up. There's some new innovation. ChatGPT was the best in the world when it came out. Now there's like five LLMs that are all at parity. You're going to see this happen over and over. New solutions, RAG engines on top of the LLMs, all these different things popping up. So, be patient, take your time. And I would say have a very thoughtful process to making decisions. And I think that that's really important too. You don't want to rush into these things, because it's a lot of wasted time, a lot of wasted resources internally with people. And ultimately, it's going to hurt the business if you're doing a lot of science projects that don't pan out into real impact. So that would be my advice at a high level, to leaders that were looking at this.
Brilliant. I love that, again, that honest and transparency in terms of that what's really needed to make that smart decision, because it's not just the loss of resources, but it's also loss of trust, right? Loss of trust internally, how it's being decision made, as well also implications and how customers will be looking at that. And we don't need a more data breaches and more issues that we're seeing that are happening on a daily basis. In closing, obviously, with everything that you shared, I'm just, again, beyond impressed how much you accomplished and where you headed. And do you mind just sharing what is coming next, Brandon? What is that bucket list? And what are you anticipating to see in the next few years?
Yes. What's coming next, right? We're always chasing. We're always climbing the ladder. It's part of the journey here. But we're really focused right now, at least the leadership team and myself, the CEO, we're really focused on driving value with our partners, Coupa, Microsoft, IBM Watson, right? IBM ecosystem, maybe some other partners in there. We're also working with companies like IT Savvy and Livingstone Partners, who are, helping us in a different way from a resell motion as well. And that is really important to our business as far as getting to more customers and being able to serve customers, is going to market with great partners who can help us serve these customers holistically. So that's where a lot of our short-term focus is. And we believe that when we continue to mature our platform, our AI, our capabilities, we're really focusing going into helping the public sector as well. We want to help the federal government. We want to help state and local. We want to go into the biggest hospitals and healthcare organizations and help them optimize expenses, because their profit margins are slim right now. We want to go into the defense sector. We want to help them as well, right? With all those contracts and complexities that they have and the big data trove and mess. And that's really where we're laser focused, is on getting to go solve the most complex data problems in the world. We're really excited about that. And we're gearing up to do that. Combination of continuing to invest in our AI, continuing to hire great people, continuing to partner with great organizations. But we have a goal to be, might sound very ambitious, but we think we have an opportunity to be the next Oracle or the next SAP. I think really we have a chance to be the next Oracle. Why? Because they got all the data in a database, which was extremely powerful. We're getting all the data from the contracts and the financials into, a data lake, essentially a data warehouse. And There's so much we can do off of it. There's so much value we can create for many different teams in the organization. You're talking about enterprise-wide value, almost a new age ERP system. So if you ask me what my mission and my focus is for the next, call it 5 to 10 years, or where Terza wants to be, I think that we're a new modernized ERP. We're probably not going to be called an ERP, but we're going to have the data. We're going to have the user experience. We're going to have the AI, everything our customers need to get answers quickly. Whether you're in legal, whether you're in finance, whether you're in procurement, whether you're in sales, whether you're in supply chain, you all need this data. And that is our focus, to give you the data very quickly, get you answers so you can go do your job. And we think it's one of the biggest opportunities in the enterprise. That's why we're so excited about it. That's why I dedicated and, you know, sacrificed my life, the co-founders as well, our leadership team here, all the great people at Terza, laser focused on solving this problem for the world. A lot of work to do, to be clear. A lot of work to do. Very, very, you know, complicated road ahead, but we're very excited about the challenge.
I love it. Specifically, as we know, as you said, so many complex issues and challenges are there, and always everything starts with the right strategic partnership, people that share the same vision, goal, objective, want to dream big, want to put themselves out there, continue to learn and continue to apply and continue to lead. And one of the things I just wanted to highlight here, Brandon, obviously you already been living, leading your legacy and already have tremendous legacy that you established based on your leadership. And I'm just curious, in the closing, for everybody watching and listening, is seeing firsthand right now where you at and where you're going to be in just a short period of time. What would you like your legacy to be? What would you like to be known for?
No, that's a great question, right? And when I think about the business, obviously we have goals for the business, and you always have personal goals as well. Everyone on the team's got their own goals. But when I think about overall what I want to be known for, is I want to be remembered as being one of the most compassionate leaders in the world. Mm-hmm. That's really what I want to be known for. Why? Because I really care about our people. I really care about our customers. I really care about our partners. I really care about the relationships that we build. I really care about mental health for the people we work with. I want people to have a high quality of life while accomplishing great things and doing hard things. I want them to have balance and enjoy what they're doing and be happy and not be stressed and not be living, that Wall Street type of, you know, mentality where you're in this grind. I want our people to really enjoy working at this company. And I think that being an empathetic servant leader is extremely important, especially in the next decade, next 20 years, next 30 years. Right? I'm a young guy. I got a lot of time to learn. I have a lot of time to go lead and get better. But I want to be known for being the most compassionate leader and actually caring about people and helping people be the best version of themselves, whether they're at Terza, whether they move on and do something else. Because I'll tell you what, we haven't lost many people. We're very grateful for that. But the people that have left Terza, we want to help them. We want them to go on and do great things. We want them to maybe go build companies. We want them to go get a great job for their families. We want them to go move to new places and explore the world. It's okay. We love staying in touch with great people. And that's very important. And that's the type of leadership that we're trying to create here, a little different, more modern, I guess you call it progressive style. I'm not going to go to you and say we're doing four-day work week yet, but it will be on the table when the company's at a certain point. We already have a flexible work week. And we want to do things a little bit differently because life has changed. And leadership needs to change too, a little bit. And we need to be more empathetic. We need to serve our people. We need to care more about people, not just the results they drive for the business. And it's going to make the community stronger. It's going to make the world better. It's going to make our kids better. It's going to make everything better. So that's what I want to be known for. And that to me is more important than any financial, you know, gain or number next to the company or next to my name. That's much more important. I can tell you that.
Brilliant. And that is so refreshing to hear from someone again who is leading such a fast-paced footprint in the everything that everybody is now really focused on, which again is that AI transformation, and solutions that come with. So Brendan, it was absolute honor and pleasure to have firsthand experience to hear not only where you headed, obviously, but also what you're currently doing and how you're serving people on global scale and what others can learn. In that mind, where they can find you, where they can go and learn more about you and your company, or how they can get in touch with you.
So I would say their easiest way is terzo.ai. Right now, terzo.ai, send in your email. We'll get back to you within 5 minutes normally. Team is very good, but that's where a lot of information will be. We're actually updating a lot of the new content to terzo.ai. So I think that's the fastest way to get in touch with us and to be able to sit down and chat with us. And we certainly appreciate the opportunity to spend time with you, Isabella. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.